Hello, my name is Jackie, and I am an alcoholic. There's things that I'm probably going to go out on a tangent about, and I'm hoping to stay focused. So on May 13th, 1985, it was a day that not most remember, if any, including my parents. They were both in a pretty bad spot at the time. My mom was suffering from depression and actually attempted suicide about 3 months after I was born. And my dad was deep in his alcoholism. And that was on top of them not being ready to have a third child. So I don't remember any of these events, obviously, but I mention them because I feel that they definitely played a part of my psyche, you know. So after once I Once we were growing up, I was first one of three kids, and then when my little brother was born, I was one of four, and we moved to the suburbs of Chicago. And my childhood was pretty normal. My dad was an alcoholic, an active drinker, but he was not abusive. He was not difficult. He was just really absent. He was not available in any way. So I kind of thought that was normal and didn't seem to affect me until later, but. I grew up in a really nice suburb, white picket fence, all that. And the only thing that was that I noticed now, looking back, is that I was a really nervous kid. So nervous to where, you know, we grew up in a kind of a more rural area. There was lots of open fields and stuff, and tornado season would come around. And every time that there was a thunderstorm, I would stay up all night long, you know, feeling like I needed to wake up the family if a tornado was coming through. And you know, save everyone's lives because everyone would definitely die if I didn't stay up every single moment of the storm passing. And that was kind of that's kind of who I am in a nutshell, is I'm just always gripping for control and feeling like I can even dictate Mother Nature at times. So I didn't really have any experience with alcohol or drugs until I was about 15, and I was hired as a babysitter for my rich neighbors to take care of their one-year-old while they gallivanted around London and Paris. And it was my first beer, first time for a lot of things. I'm going to just slow down for a second because I'm getting a little bit lost in what I want to say and what I really want to do. By sharing my story is send the message. So making sure that I get that in line here. Basically, during that trip, I realized that I could be cool. I could be accepted, you know. And thankfully, I had a pretty awesome group of friends that I came home to. And throughout my high school career, I didn't touch any alcohol or drugs. What happened during that little spot too is that I got myself into my first like sexual assault and put another child, you know, another person in danger through just trying to be cool and getting drinks and stuff. So that's where the real importance comes there. So after high school, I started to pursue my dreams as a musician. I'd always play violin in the orchestra, but I was starting to sing and play guitar as well and wanted to pursue the singer-songwriter and also being a fiddle player. So I started going to bars. I had a fake ID and I really didn't want to drink. It was really to go and play, but I realized right away that this was a boys' club, that, you know, I needed to be, you know, cool in order to be accepted as a player is what I thought, or I needed to be able to do something that the boys could do because just playing an instrument wasn't going to be anything close to enough. So I learned how to drink whiskey and I learned really well, really fast. I remember and never will forget my first shot of Jack Daniels and that exhilarating feeling. I mean, I slapped in my knee and I just couldn't believe that I had missed this feeling my entire life and I was never going to miss it again. So I got a reputation for being a super heavy drinker and this cool chick who plays fiddle. And, also, you know, most of my heroes were songwriters, like, and were, you know, I romanticized the idea of being this alcoholic, of being this uncontrollable drinker that just wreaked havoc wherever I went. I wanted to be that in a lot of ways. Even though it never really felt like that's who I really was. So I kind of cloaked myself for a long time as this really raging alcoholic drinker, partier, and was always down for anything. I lived in probably 10 states in 15 years and was just, I had a really unstable life. I did meet my husband at a bar and he played a song and I fell in love with him immediately to the point where I decided before I even knew his name that I was going to marry him. And I did. And that was not a great relationship, a long time that don't necessarily, there's a lot of things that happened. But my drinking did get out of hand at some point and, or continued to get out of hand, I should say. And my ex-husband would buy these bit of cheap gin because he thought, well, A, you know, it's a lot cheaper than my Jack Daniels habit. And then he thought it would slow me down because that's super fucking gross. And I just learned how to take straight shots of gin, like no problem. So that didn't work. So while we were going through our divorce, I fell even deeper into the bottle, which I really didn't think was possible. I had a lot of friends who, you know, sympathized for me and knew what I, that I liked whiskey especially and would buy me as much booze as I wanted. So I was really destitute. I didn't have any money, but my drinking habits from that point on had been supported by either music or friends. And so through that divorce period, I started blacking out even more than I had been before. And I'll say for the following 6 or 7 years until from my divorce until when I got sober, I remember maybe 1/3 of my life. And that is not an exaggeration. So as I'm going through my divorce, I realized that Jack Daniels is the one man who never done me wrong. I always knew what to expect from him and he was always going to be there for me. So I legally changed my name to Daniels, to be Jackie Ray Daniels. And like the Pee Wee quote, if you love it so much, why don't you marry it? I fucking married it. And that's how much I love booze. I wanted to be that. So over the next 6 years, like I said, I really didn't give a shit about anything. Basically, I wanted to do the thing that a lot of us seem to want to do and just die, you know, just drink myself to death. I became a trash can for drugs. You know, I'll call myself an addict too, because I don't really know. I know I did drugs and lots of them and I would do anything for them. If they were on the table, it was not a problem for me to do whatever I needed to get those drugs and more of them. I never did shoot up or anything that I know of, but I swear to fucking God, man, I really don't know what happened a lot in my life. I did things like when I was playing gigs, there's one time I was drinking Jack Daniels all day. I probably killed a fifth and I had a show at like 2 o'clock in the morning in this festival in Alaska many, many years ago, maybe 10 years ago. So this is before I even got married and all that. But, I was always a bad drinker, but I got up on stage and I was hammered and somebody slipped me a sugar cube of acid and I didn't know what it was, but I didn't care. So now I'm tripping balls and I'm really drunk and I walk off the edge of the stage because I thought I could walk on air and I broke my fiddle in 2 pieces, punched myself in the face as I went down off the stage and totally killed the show. And this was something that I did. This was something that happened to me throughout my life. And as I got older and was getting these more you know, these gigs that I wanted to keep with people that I wanted to keep touring with and were taking me on the road for months at a time. And I'm this out of control. I mean, I was always falling down, always saying really inappropriate shit and like stealing the show in not a good way. And then sometimes not being able to show up. So, I mean, I was ruining everything that was good for me. Just the end. So as I'm getting to like one of the worst days was when I was supposed to be at a show and I had to call my friend for, I think it was like the third time. And this was a big deal. This was a very well-paid show and a big deal that I missed it. And it was after a really bad night of drinking and drugs at this festival. I ran into one of my ex-husband's best friends and I remember getting into a big fight, made a huge ass out of myself in front of my colleagues. And, I wanted to die. So I was done. I was in pain physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, all the above. Everything was checked and there was no way out. There wasn't. I knew I couldn't stop drinking. I knew I wouldn't even try. I knew that was just not an option for me. So suicide was it. And I was in the mountains and I was going to drive off a cliff, off a mountain. And I called my mom and I didn't know anything about what I told you earlier about her being suicidal and having her experience. And that's when she told me and, you know, was like, so if I killed myself, you wouldn't have me to call right now. You wouldn't, you know, she would never have been a part of my life. And she made it clear that if I killed myself, that it would be me killing her as well. And so that kind of got wiped off the table. It wasn't really an option for me anymore. And I know that's like, I don't know what that story's like for you, but for me, it was this really morbid way to bring some hope to me, to be like, well, guess what? I do fucking exist and I need to figure this out because this isn't going to work. You know, I can't keep going the way I'm going and survive or thrive or be worth waking up every day. So I started playing with the idea of maybe getting sober, but it was just a really distant dream. I really thought what I could do was manage it 3 months off, 3 months on. When I was on the road, you know, maybe I could party, but I'd have to keep it under control. But I would reserve like a quarter of the year to not do anything. And, you know, that doesn't work. So, you know, I would try and I couldn't get more than 2 or 3 days without really bad DTs. I, you know, at that point I had been spending at least 2 or 3 years with a bottle in my purse at all times. I never was without booze. It was on me at all times. And I woke up drinking, went to bed drinking. Don't remember much of it. So I would try and go, you know, I was planning on going time without anything. And I would get to about 2 or 3 days and there would be horrible shakes. You know, I'd wake myself up with the shakes. I would be really sick. I couldn't eat anything. And then I would have these horrible hallucinations. Also for those last 2 years, I really didn't have anywhere to live. I was living out of my van and never had a home base or anything like that. And so I would have these horrible hallucinations of people outside my van or like, it was really terrifying. So I started talking to friends of mine who work with people and work in rehab facilities. They're not addicts or alcoholics themselves, but they know about it. So they kind of suggested that I don't go through this alone or without medical help. And so I needed to finish up this tour that I was on. And so by October 2019, I was in Texas for my best friend's wedding and it was the end of my tour season and I had nothing really on the books. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go to detox for like 4 days. I'm just going to go get detoxed and I'm going to figure this out. And my best friend I finally had to tell her about it because I'm calling AR and I'm talking Austin Recovery because they had like the best ad for like affordable, you know, anybody can do this. Come to AR, we'll help you. And so I'm calling them and I don't remember who I talked to. I feel like it was Allie's sister because I remember Allie was there when I was still there. And she was like telling me all these awesome opportunities for me that I could get in like right away. And that maybe I should think about having 30 days, you know, instead of detox. And I'm like, no. And I didn't have any money, you know, and she was like, she got me a grant and I didn't understand anything. I thought that like, I was so fucking out of it, guys. I had no comprehension. So I was trying to do this by myself. I finally asked my best friend to help me and she calls back AR and she's like, yeah, I just talked to Jacqueline. And she said, like, I told her she's got a grant. She's got her whole thing covered. We got a bed for her. And I'm like, Joy told me, my best friend told me this. And I was like, oh shit. Awesome. But I still wasn't convinced about 30 days. So I called another friend of mine and she told me that, you know, what's going to happen is you're going to have, your brain is going to tell you that you're dying. Like you might have all the chemicals out of you and you might feel clear headed after 4 or 5 days of detox or whatever it is, but your brain is going to tell you, you are going to die without booze. And if you think that you can handle that, you know, okay, go ahead. But if you go to 30 days of treatment, you have like so much of a better chance of like getting over this and really figuring this out for yourself. And she told me, you know, she knows me really well. And she goes, for someone like you, you're going to have to lean into these people. You're going to have to trust them. You're going to have to put your bullshit ideas aside. And, you know, the thing is, you don't know anything. These people know. And you're going to have to really find just trust and do whatever they say and know that they're trying to help you. And if after 30 days you get out of there and you don't buy it, then go ahead, figure it out for yourself. So I still at this point had no clue that AA was in my future. I had no idea about the 12 steps. My dad had quit drinking. He's been not drinking for over 20 years, but he never had a program. He's one of those people that was able to just stop. He still smokes weed, and that's his deal. That's not my program. That's not my thing. But I had no fucking clue. So I get to AR, and I'm just like, you know, comprehension is not a thing I can do at this point. I go to detox. I don't remember anything. You know, there were people who introduced them or said hi to me like they knew me. And I was like, I don't fucking know you. And it's like, they helped me get their my vitals and shit. Like, I don't remember any of that. And, so I'm after detox, I get into the lady's house and I don't know what the word is. I felt free in a lot of ways. I was really scared, and my friend's words kept echoing in my head that I have to trust, that I have to just lean into this and do something different. I meant to say that when I decided to stay for the 30 days, that's like my step one. I am powerless. I need help. Like, I can't do this on my own. I thought up until that moment, up until I decided to really do the 30 days, that that I could do this. And I don't know what made me really believe that, because this was my first time. This is my first time ever getting sober. And I really thought that I was going to be able to smoke weed still. I really thought that all these things were, it wasn't going to happen the way that it has happened. So getting into AR and realizing that I have 12 steps to work through. And I have these, all this God stuff to work through. And there was a lot of challenges up front that I really wanted to throw my arms up about and roll my fucking eyes and do the all that bullshit that I knew wasn't going to be helpful for me. So I did my best. I read the whole book from cover to cover, which I've never done. I probably haven't done since I started drinking, is read a book. And it was an incredible experience. Going through my step 2 and 3, I tried to get through my step 1 through 5 at the ranch. That was really important to me. It was something that you guys kind of helped me figure out what was going to be a good goal, you know, and not saying like, if I didn't do it, I was fucked. I never felt scared. I never felt set up to fail. I really followed my friend's advice, and I'm so thankful I did. So my step 2 and 3 was like a power greater than me. It was my first idea was just like, sure, why not? You know, I used to be really religious and Catholic and have that whole thing and gave that up a long time ago. But I did know that I had a spiritual problem. I mean, I had no spiritualness, no spirituality to go with to help me. And so anyway, it was a sure, why not? And the sanity thing, can it restore me to sanity? I mean, I've never had sanity before in my whole life, but I'll give it a try. You know, I'll see if that's something that I can have. Definitely didn't think that it was for me, but these people say that maybe I can have that. So I made a decision. I did. I made the decision. It was kind of feeling like giving up, but in that letting go kind of way, I guess it was a surrender of sorts, you know. But it felt more freeing than giving up on a relationship, or I don't know, maybe it was like that. Anyway, I'm not sure, so I'm not going to say anything more about that. But my step 4 going forward, that was definitely a work in progress for me. I still don't know 100% if I'm being honest with myself fully, but I heard the words thorough and fearless from the start. I heard those deeply, and it's what I wanted for myself. I wanted to see myself. I'm so scared to look at myself. And I knew that once getting a little bit of clarity, that this was going to be really hard. And the idea that I was going to find some sponsor who was going to just be like somebody I can trust, no, it was really unfathomable. So I worked really hard on trying to accept it. Chris has an awesome workshop that he does, and I took that as many times as I could while I was at AR. And still every so often we'll listen and watch the video he has up on the website. If anybody's struggling, I highly recommend it. It broke it down for me in a way where I could just try. I could do it. And so I had a couple of things that I put on there that I was definitely going to take to the grave. You know, I just kind of sort of wrote them down in code to myself, but I wasn't going to share this. I still was on the hunt for a sponsor, and she came to AR and told her story at one point, and I had always remembered it, and I wrote down her number. It was like one of the only people, or the first people that I wrote down her number. And I was thinking about calling her. I had about two or 1.5 weeks left at the ranch. And I go out to one of the offsite meetings, and she told her story that night. She was the guest speaker, and it was just kind of serendipitous. So I felt, you know, I'm not really like a God person. I have a really hard time with the whole God thing still, but I know that this program can work for me still. It felt spooky that she was the one speaking that night. And, it has been just, a really incredible relationship that is, you can't explain it to anybody else. I don't know if there's anything else in the world like an AA sponsor, in my opinion. There's just no other relationship like it. So I go through my step five and I decide to voice my two things that I was going to take to the grave, because I kept hearing y'all's voices in my head of being thorough and fearless from the very start. And so I did, and I really wasn't expecting anything grand, but I felt cold. I felt like shock. I felt like somebody had ripped something out of me, whether I needed it still or not. I felt viscerally different. And I don't think it was until the next day that I had like a total freak out. I don't know if Elizabeth remembers, but I definitely remember her trying to help me out. And I just kind of ran for the hills. I just ran to the most outside point of the ranch I could get to and just sat there and looked at the horizon. And it's so fucking beautiful there. There's so many scenes burned in my brain and in my heart. And I felt like I could connect. I felt like I could connect to something else. And I hadn't felt that way in a very long time, if ever, not quite like this. So this was all big stuff to realizing that maybe I could live a different way, that maybe I could actually feel emotions and it would be okay, and that maybe I could trust in something that I can't quite explain or see, but I can hear and feel all these other people doing it. You know, it's this really abstract, beautiful perspective change that I never thought possible, not sober at least, and definitely not for someone like me. I was too scared all the time. So when I got to step six and the whole entirely ready to give it over, like I said, I still have problems with this God thing, and I kind of struggled with the wording, and I was trying to find a way to relate, and I didn't want to feel like there was something inherently wrong with me. I kind of have shifted my thinking into how have I been or can be constructive or destructive, you know? And how do I find that path, and how can I quiet myself enough to, instead of just reacting, really thinking about which way I'm headed and how I'm headed. And when I got to step seven, to humbly ask for the shortcomings, I pray for a sense of flow. I've explained my higher power, or I call it my outside power, my OP, like nature. Like, nature has this flow. She just kind of does her thing. And I'm sure, you know, we have altered Mother Nature in ways, you know, but she continues to like just do her thing. You know, it rains when it's supposed to rain, and it's a drought when it's supposed to be a drought. And I don't know, there's this natural flow of things. And I just thought, okay, can I find my natural flow? Can I find my natural self? You know, And that does take looking outside of me. When I got to steps 8 and 9, I had mostly very mild step 8 and 9 stuff. I was one of those people who I have pretty much all of my yets. I don't know how the fuck I got away with it, but I didn't get a DUI. I didn't have an unwanted pregnancy. I didn't, you know, get in an accident. I didn't, like, nothing happened to me that carried over into my sober life, except for, you know, all the emotional damage. But I have a lot of yet, so I didn't cause that much damage. I know they're all waiting for me out there, by the way, too. That's something that helps me a lot, is thinking about all the things that didn't happen to me, and not that it doesn't make me qualify, but that I don't need them to happen. I don't have to live like that, where those things are going to happen. So the big 9 that I did, my big amends, was with my ex-husband. That was a process, and it was kind of a beautiful process. I'm very reactive. When I feel uncomfortable, I want it to be done with. I want to find something and do the first thing that I can think of that's going to relieve that, even if it's just a little bit. I never thought that my ex-husband would ever speak to me again, and I didn't want to cause him any more harm. Not that it was all of my fault, but there, you know, I definitely was a crazy alcoholic. I can't even fathom some of the torture I put him through. So I didn't want to cause him any more harm. So the first step was I needed to write a letter. So I wrote a letter and had my sponsor be my surrogate ex-husband. And that felt okay. I could feel that it wasn't thorough enough, but that was good for now. And we did kind of some research, me and my sponsor, and reached out to other women who have kind of been through something similar, and reached out in the program to really just kind of figure out the best way to move forward with it. And it took time. I mean, it took several months, which is a lot of time for me to not react to something. So eventually it felt right, and I felt like my intention was clear, and I was able to write an email, and I felt good. I felt really good just sending it directly to him. And he responded, and he forgave me essentially, and told me there wasn't anything else that he needed from me, and that he wished me well. And he took responsibility for some shit himself, which was, like, you know, definitely not on the table. That was not an option. I didn't think that was going to happen. And it was really powerful to me to just go through that process. Like I said, it felt like putting one foot in front of the other, instead of just, like, demanding that he forgives me or doing something that's going to cause harm to somebody else. More than I recognized, I think, going through it, that was one of the big pivotal moments for me in my program, was learning how to recognize when I've done something that requires an amends and how to go about achieving that amends. I wish it was like a fourth step where it's like across the board, you just go through these things and then it's like all good, but it's just not. It's been very like a tailored experience on how to approach it. So that was my big step 9, and moving on to step 10 is tricky for me. I was in the habit of writing a bit more when I first got out and was in IOP. I got better. I was pretty good at keeping a nightly something. I can't remember what the questions are even now, but I used whatever Chris suggested. That's more of like a more positive take on the questions than what are in the book, which, you know, I'm really trying to stay away from anything that's like, I'm fucked up, I need to be fixed, something's wrong with me, you know, character defects, like all those things are really difficult language for me to be okay. I feel like I'm working a healing process, and it's totally cool if it works for someone else. It's not, and obviously it hasn't stopped me from working a program, but it's just something I need to be aware of. And I don't just turn words around without going over it with my sponsor usually, or somebody else. I don't want to just take control of the whole book and rewrite it for myself because I'm uncomfortable with some of it, because sometimes it's okay to be uncomfortable. But in this respect, it's a great tool. I feel like doing a step 10 for lifelong shit, man. Like, what a great thing to be able to just kind of take a glance at myself every day, see how the fuck I am, see what I've done, see if I can be better tomorrow. Like, what a cool tool. I think every single person in the whole world should do 10 steps, you know, every night. What a beautiful thing. Step 11 is something that I take to heart pretty seriously. Praying and meditating. Praying is something that's a little difficult for me. That's like, it feels very much like it needs to be a conversation. And sometimes I can't quite hear. I can't quite hear what the other end is telling me. And I feel left out and I'll feel like abandoned. And I just realize I need to be a little more still and quiet. So meditation really brings me to that point, to where I can actually get a sense of prayer and connection to my higher power. So the stillness is really something that I am no good at, but have practiced a lot. I fell really hard into meditation and yoga, which I want to mention really quick, because at AR, when I first was going, there was a fellow who would come and teach us yoga. And he was like, not that great. I didn't really enjoy his class. And also, he didn't show up sometimes. And I remember it being a little bit of a disappointment. So there was one time he didn't show up and the girls were like, Jackie, you should teach us yoga, because I was doing some stretching. I had done yoga, but I wasn't like a yoga person. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And I remember feeling like really natural. And there was something that like a bell rang inside me. And I didn't really investigate that part of my story until recently, actually. But I did become a yoga instructor. I just got certified about a month and a half ago, and I specifically got trained. Thank you. I specifically took another course in trauma-informed yoga, which is for people like us who have been through the fucking ringer and have some shit. And because there's a lot of things about the yoga world that I don't really appreciate, blah, blah, blah. Tangent number one, I think. So far, so good. getting to step 12, I've only sponsored one gal. And she went out, or at least I've lost contact with her, but it was a joy and it was something that I felt totally unqualified for and something that I knew I needed to do. I've been going to a secular meeting since I got out of the ranch that really, really helped me out with a lot of my kind of more stubborn issues that I knew I needed to do something about. I couldn't just sit on my hands about it. I needed to really dive into this whole God thing and figure it out, because I knew that that couldn't be the reason why I don't work this program. There were too many fucking cool things about it. So finding a secular place, they say I'm the responsible prayer, which is, I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. And that has led me to so many opportunities to help people and to not shy away when called. And I've had really good friends of mine who I used to, be total delinquents with, who have reached out. And they're not sober yet, but they're starting their journey. Some of them have reached a whole month. So when I first got out of AR and the pandemic hit, I was actually in Alaska for some shows at the Iditarod, which is what Chris was talking about earlier, that I've traveled all over. I was up in Alaska and I got stuck up there. I was up there March 10th. So March 11th, the whole world shut down. And my room in Austin that I was staying at my friend's house, her and her husband needed to work from home. So I wasn't really able to come home. So I had a lot of transitions. Really, it wasn't the rug being pulled out from under me, though. It was a lot of really, really cool stuff that ended up happening. And I found out that I could rely on people. And I had a lot of actual friends and real family. But I was up there with a friend of mine who I was playing some shows with, or was supposed to, and he has a really tough problem. And I was really concerned about this. You know, I wasn't living with him. I was able to stay in my own place. I had my own space, but you know, he was somebody that I had a lot of really good times with getting fucked up, and he's still doing his thing. And you know what ended up happening? He stayed sober for the entire month and a half that, or the last half that I was up there. So for an entire month and a half, he stayed sober and really came to some meetings with me, and is still continuing his journey. I've had a cousin and a friend. So, I mean, like, I haven't necessarily led someone through the steps, but this is what I offer. You know, I don't say I can help you get sober. I'm going to help. You're going to get sober with my help. You know, it's, this is what I have to offer. This is what I did. And this is what I experienced. And do you want to see some more? Let me show you some more. Here, this is what these people have experienced. Check this out. Do you want to talk about it? Here's a fucking book, you know, like, and just trying to, and realizing that I can't do the work for somebody else. And it has strengthened my program and my recovery in ways that, it wouldn't have made sense to me if you know, just by telling me, which is what I really appreciate in the book too, is like, you need to experience this. You will not want to miss this. Like, yeah, it's so true. And you have to just do it. Let's see. I'm getting towards the end here, guys. This is so cool. Well, my life is like now. So I went through all these moving phases where I was, you know, here and there for a few months, and it was all really scary. I felt safe at the same time because I had really great support to bounce ideas off of. It was another time of patience and practicing that I can get through something, you know. So many times I would like to numb out and void this experience. And instead, like, that's not my life now. I have to get through this, and I can. And all these steps allow for that, to realize that I live a life that has 12 principles and values that I can read about, listen to about. I mean, there's so many resources. It gives me everything that I need. And I'm still unstable. I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm being taken care of by my parents. I'm being able to be on the front lines of this growth and transformation right with them. They are so supportive. They do not understand it at all. So I definitely need my homies, but that's okay. You know, the point is that I am safe, and I can take this time. I wish I had more figured out, but I don't. But I do plan on just doing this thing tomorrow, man. You know, I'm doing it the rest of today, and I plan on doing it tomorrow, and I'm okay. And that's fucking awesome, you know? So I think that is all I have to say.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you, guys.
That was awesome.
Hey, Jackie, that was awesome.
Hey, Jackie, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
You did great, Jackie.
You're so amazing.
A bunch of things where I was like, oh, I never thought about my own situation like that.
Hell yeah, you killed it. Thank you.